Welcome to this week's Sporting Spotlight here on Dublin City FM with me, Breffni Early. This week's guest is Irish cricket legend, Kevin O'Brien. Kevin, welcome to the show.
Thanks a million, cheers.
Is legend a fair term to use? You kind of squirmed a little bit when I said it.
I think you've called me that twice. I don't know about that, to be honest. I think it's always nice, I suppose, to be called it, but I'd say I'm far from a legend at the moment.
Let's rewind a couple of years from what we're going to be talking about for the bulk of the interview. Cricket, why cricket? What struck you about that sport at an early age?
Well, I'm the youngest kid of six. Just grew up probably 400 or 500 yards here from Railway Union in Sandyrand. So, you know, from an early age, we played all sports, myself and Niall, Kira, Paul, Jerome, Connor. So we're in the garden playing every week. We're down in Railway every weekend. So why we took to cricket, especially, was Dad played a lot and played for Ireland as well. You know, he's the leading run scorer in Leinster cricket of all time with over 25,000 runs. So, you know, I suppose we just had a love for the game from an early age.
What was life like in the O'Brien household growing up?
Pretty crazy. You know, I think from an early age we all played any sport. You know, we've all played senior hockey here in the club. We've all played senior cricket in the club as well. So, you know, myself and Niall played a lot of football growing up, Gaelic, you know, and Niall excelled in hurling as well in Star of the Sea. So back then, you know, Mum and Dad were happy to get us out of the house as much as we could. And, you know, I think it was fortunate that we grew up so close to the club here in Raleigh.
Who were the biggest influences on you growing up?
I obviously looked up to Dad whenever he was playing here at Railway. Unfortunately never played with him. I was probably a little bit too young. But yeah, you know, obviously the older brothers, Paul and Ger and Connor, and obviously the older I got, you know, the more I looked up to Niler, seeing what he did over in England, making the transition to county cricket, and then obviously into the Irish side. It was probably subconsciously something that I really, really wanted to do.
What age were you when you realised I could be quite handy at this sport?
I suppose probably like a lot of other, well, unlike a lot of other sports people, probably from a relatively older age. I obviously grew up playing in the Irish under 13s, under 15s, and that type of those teams. And, you know, it probably wasn't until I was probably 17 or 18, possibly even 19, that I thought I could make a career as a professional. I went over to London to play with the MCC Young Cricketers for two seasons. They're like a young academy side who train at Lords. And I was over there for two summers with William Porterfield, Gary Wilson. You know, and it was a great learning curve for me. Probably around 19, I probably came home and thought, you know, I really want to try and get into professional cricket.
You know, the outlook of the sport at that time in Ireland wouldn't have been particularly great. It wouldn't have... The dream of playing professional sport, cricket, in this country probably wasn't really on the radar at all, was it?
No, not at all. It was 2004 and 2005, and we hadn't even qualified for the World Cup yet. So, you know, I went over as an 18, 19-year-old into London, you know, and tried to pursue a career. And then in 2006, I came home looking to get into the Irish side that had just qualified for the 2007 World Cup.
You hadn't been involved in the qualification for the World Cup?
No, I made my debut in 2006, a year after the lads qualified. So, you know, I've always said I was, you know, you need a little bit of luck in sport, and I suppose I made my debut 3 months before the World Cup team was selected, so I probably didn't have enough time to get myself dropped out of the team. So, I mean, I suppose from that point of view, I was really lucky.
The World Cup itself in 2007, does the sport need something like that to really push itself into the consciousness of the general public? Because the sport from, say, 2004-2005, as you mentioned, was pretty quiet. But now, you mentioned Irish cricket. People know about it. They know about the World Cup in 07, they know about the World Cup in 2011, they know about beating the English in that World Cup. We'll get back to that again later. And even the recent game against England in Malahide is a talking point for general sports fans. What kind of a difference does that make to your life as an Irish cricketer?
Yeah, massive. I think 2007 was a huge opening for Cricket Ireland. You know, we went over there as 15 guys who basically just wanted to go over and have a bit of fun. You know, it was to play in a world stage. Not everyone gets to do it, you know, and we certainly weren't going to go over there and be too harsh on ourselves. I think the way we played cricket in that tournament, you know, it showed that A, that we have talent in this country, and B, that we're willing to fight for every single thing that we can get. You know, I think the first game was a fantastic game to play in the tie against Zimbabwe. You know, we came back from basically from defeat to snatch a tie, and then obviously Paddy's Day 2 days later we beat Pakistan. So, you know, it was just a fantastic tournament to be involved in, and as you said, it certainly did open the door for Cricket Ireland as an organisation, but also the players that were involved.
The Pakistan game is of particular interest. First of all, it's the first win in a World Cup. It was on St Patrick's Day, but there was some very strange off-field happenings around that game. Talk us through that.
Yeah, I suppose, I mean, in the aftermath of our victory, you know, we came home, back to the hotel for maybe a brief stop, and then we headed north to Ochos Rios, where all our supporters were staying. You know, we probably had, I don't know, maybe 2,000 supporters out in the Caribbean at that tournament. So, I mean, half of them were staying in this holiday resort, Ochos Rios, which is about a three-hour drive, although it's only about 35 kilometres. You know, so we obviously didn't hear anything about what happened to Bob. You know, obviously it was a tragic incident, you know, and something that, you know, puts the game into the spotlight, you know, but, you know, it just shows that, you know, at the end of the day, it's just a cricket match, and, you know, it was obviously a sad time to be involved in the World Cup.
In terms of how that kind of an event has an impact on the rest of the tournament, did it have an impact on the field for Ireland, or was it something that you said, okay, that's happened, it's unfortunate, but we move on from it?
Yeah, I think, you know, obviously it was a tragic thing, but I think we were quite lucky we didn't play for another, I think, 7 or 8 days, so obviously we had time to remember Bob, you know, and obviously just put that to the back of our mind, because we obviously still had 5 or 6 games left in the tournament. You know, because we beat Pakistan, we qualified for Super 8, so, you know, we had the West Indies, I think it was eight days later, and then we were into the Super 8 competition.
The practicalities of a World Cup are pretty straightforward for any athlete who's in it, but anyone in the general public who's kind of just sees it from the outside looking in, what they read in the papers, what they see on TV, they don't quite get that feel of being in a camp, being away from your families probably for 5-6 weeks for that period, and it's one of the longest World Cups in any sports. How do you deal with that? How do you deal with being away from your home, your families, your general day-to-day activities for so long? How do you stop from getting bored is really the question.
It's difficult. You know, I think living out of, you know, you say to people, oh, I'm going off to XYZ for 6 weeks, you know, they all say, oh, fantastic, great trip. And, you know, it obviously is, you're getting away, you're getting to see some parts of the world that you probably would have never have been to. But, you know, it is difficult living out of a suitcase for 6 or 7 weeks. You know, you drop into a hotel, put your bags in the room, straight down to training. You know, it's not as glamorous as it sounds. There is a lot of downtime. You know, we only train for maybe 3-4 hours a day, so you have a lot of time there to fill. And, you know, a lot of guys struggle to find stuff to do. You know, I'm quite fortunate. I'm pretty sporty, and I mean, if there's a golf course nearby, I'll certainly get out for a few rounds of golf every now and again. And, you know, I think
is that encouraged by the management in terms of, would they not prefer you to be just in resting when you're not training?
At times they would certainly prefer us to be resting, but, you know, I think it just depends what you have coming up in the next couple of days. You know, if we were all for 2 or 3 days, you know, they'd probably encourage you to get out and get out of the hotel, otherwise you just go stir crazy. You know, it's get out and get some fresh air and just get a bit of golf into you. But, you know, it certainly is difficult. You know, people spend a lot of time on the internet and, you know, I suppose watching DVDs and that type of thing and series, you know. But yeah, it certainly is a more difficult time to pass than people may think.
In terms of that World Cup in 2007, what were the expectations going into that? What had you spoken about as a group?
Well, as a group, I mean, we felt we could qualify for the Super 8. You know, I think we were paired with Zimbabwe, Pakistan and West Indies. You know, we had beaten Zimbabwe a couple of years before the tournament in Belfast, and then we had West Indies and Pakistan, who are on their day probably one of the best teams in the world, but if you don't catch them on the day, you know, they can lose to anyone. So we knew we had a chance. The first game was massive, you know, the Zimbabwe game, and I suppose the result we got from that, the tie, you know, gave us a bit of confidence going into the Pakistan game. And, you know, once we qualified, you know, from then it was just a case of enjoying it. You know, we had like six, seven more games against seven test teams. So, you know, it was just a fantastic time to be involved. And, you know, I suppose the highlight of the Super 8s was beating Pakistan.
Post-World Cup in 2007, you come back to Ireland. Cricket is now firmly in the mindset of people. Beating Pakistan on St. Patrick's Day really put it into the public consciousness. What was the difference in your day-to-day life around Sandymount, around the club here in Railway?
Not really much of a difference, to be honest. Obviously, we had, you know, we had a few guest appearances. You know, we were on the Late Late Show, I think, the Friday we came back. But we didn't have much time to relax. I mean, 2 days after that, we had a game up in Belfast on the Sunday against Kent in a friend's Providence domestic competition. So, you know, we probably didn't have that much time to reflect and I suppose recharge our batteries. And, you know, I think in the next couple of games in that tournament, we were fairly beaten. You know, I think we didn't really show up, and, you know, the results probably didn't stand to what we were probably capable of playing. You know, I think it was difficult with it was just the first game that Phil took over, Phil Simmons, and, you know, the transition period between AD and Phil probably took a little bit longer than people may have expected.
After 2007, there's a bit of a bedding in period for the new management team. How has that evolved?
Yeah, it's been fantastic. I think, you know, obviously Simo had a fairly difficult start taking over from AD. AD had done a fantastic job in the 5 or 6 years he was in charge. You know, and I think it took Phil a little bit longer to stamp his way of coaching, his philosophy, his beliefs, you know. But you can see the results now. You know, we in the last couple of years we've been a fantastically organised team, a very consistent team as well on the field.
Bring us up to 2011 and the World Cup. What happened in the intervening years? Because obviously, again, for most of the Irish consciousness, it was the World Cup in 2007, the World Cup in 2011, and few people would struggle to fill the blanks in. What happened from Irish cricket's point of view?
We had a fairly busy time. You know, I suppose we played in 2 World Cups in that time that not many people may realise. You know, we had the 2009 World Cup in England, which was a 2020 format, where we qualified again for the Super 8s. We beat Pakistan in the first game, and then we lost to India in the group stage, and then we went on and played New Zealand, South Africa and Pakistan, I think it was, in the Super 8s. So, I mean, we had another, I suppose, highlighting profile tournament in England, and I think we acquitted ourselves quite well. 2010, we were in the West Indies for the 2020 World Cup as well, which England went on to win, and I suppose we're lucky to do so. We were in the group of West Indies and England, and, you know, I think the second game against England we had a great chance to win. We restricted them to 120 in 20 overs and it was rained off. So I think from that point of view it was a frustrating time, because we didn't really get a chance to show what we could do. But yeah, you know, and then obviously we had the 2011 the year after.
2011, early March, you're playing England in the World Cup, the 50 over World Cup, and you pretty much set the world on fire that day. Tell us about the build up to that game.
Yeah, I suppose we had a difficult start. We lost to Bangladesh the first game in a match that we should have won, chasing 205. We were well set, 150 for 5, I think, or for 4 maybe, and I think we were bowled out for 180 in the end, something like that, which was hugely disappointing. But, you know, Phil spoke to us in the change rooms afterwards and said, don't be too hard on ourselves, we still have 6 games left in the competition, at least 6 games left in the competition, and there's no reason why we can't go and win all 6. We left Bangladesh and arrived in Bangalore, and you know, we had a new sense of confidence within the squad and each individual. So I suppose the England game, from the position we were in at half time, and then also after 25 overs in our innings, it was obviously a bit disappointing to take from the positions we were in. You know, we were obviously staring defeat again, and I suppose the rest is history, as they say.
Well, you're not going to gloss over it quite like that. Talk us through the couple of opening batsmen and then your introduction.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, John Boy and Trent did a great job to restrict England to 235 or whatever it was. I think they only conceded maybe 50 in the last 8 overs or something like that, and picked up a couple of wickets. So I suppose we had a little bit of momentum going into the half-time break. You know, we saw on that wicket a couple of days beforehand that England and India had tied, England chasing a slightly larger total than what they had set us. So we knew it was a good wicket, and we knew it was a very small ground and a quick scoring ground. So, you know, we just had to give ourselves the best chance and to chase a total. But unfortunately for us, you know, we lost Porty first ball. A bit unlucky, he dragged it back onto his stumps. And from then, I think we kind of played a bit of freedom. You know, Sterlow played really, really well. I think he got 36. Joycey and Niler both got 30s, you know. And we were actually at a decent scoring rate for maybe the first 18 overs. Maybe we might have been 85 or 90 for one or two. You know, and then Graham Swan came on and I think got a couple of wickets early on. And, you know, I mean, when I walked out, we were 106 for 4, and soon to be 111 for 5. So when Cusey joined me at the wicket, so the position we were in wasn't really the position we wanted to be in. But you know, from then on, it just kind of exploded onto the scene, and you know, we took a few chances. You know, well, obviously got a bit of luck, and things went from there.
What's going through your head as you're walking out to bat for the first time in that game? Are you thinking, okay, I need to really push this, or you're saying, let's see what happens? Is there a game plan in your mind in terms of what kind of shot selection you're going to go for?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose walking out 106 for 4, you know, walking out to meet Gary at the wicket, and you know, he was obviously in for a few balls beforehand, and you know, we didn't really say much to each other. We just said, oh, just keep going, take it over, kind of thing, and just the usual stuff you talk about. And you know, I think when Gary got out and Cusey came in, you know, we could have potted around and got like 250 in the first 8 or 50 overs and lost by like 80 runs and kind of had our heads held high. But you know, I remember saying to Cusey, listen, let's just go for it. You know, we've nothing to lose. We may as well be bowled out for 160, then get 250 for 8 or 9 or 50 overs. So from then, you know, myself and Cusey, I mean, took a back seat, I suppose, you know, and I just took the game to England and I got a few away off Graham Swan, and from there, you know, looked to capitalise on anything that the English guys were giving me, you know, and I suppose from then it just went like a snowball. You know, once we started scoring, they just couldn't stop us. It was just one of those things.
Is cricket a confidence thing? Is it a thing when you hit the first 6 or the first 4, or you get a good over together? Is it something that it just kind of keeps the momentum, carries you through the next few overs?
Yeah, I think, I mean, you've mentioned two words there that I massively believe in most cricket, if not all, is huge. Obviously, as a player and an individual, you have to be confident in your own game. And I think we've all played enough cricket in the Irish side to know that we can do something at any period in a match that we've done. I mean, we can look back on the history and say, listen, I've been in this position before, I need to play this way. So you're confident, you know, I mean, you've been successful at a certain time. And the other thing is momentum. I think it's like most sports, I think if you can gain the momentum early, you know, and you just try and keep it as long as you can. England had the momentum, and we, myself and Cusey, just quickly shifted it back, and all of a sudden, you know, we were going at 8, 9, 10 and over at will. And you know, and it's hard as a bowling team to wrestle that momentum back, and you know, we just held it for as long as we could, probably right up until the end.
The actual record you broke that day was the fastest fastest century in one day cricket, is that correct?
World Cup cricket.
How much of an honour is that to have that? Like, if you imagine when you're growing up in Sandymount here, did you ever dream that was possible?
No. You know, obviously it's a very proud thing to have. I mean, it's still kind of a little bit taken aback when someone says it. You know, it is hard to believe that my name is up there beside the record books. But you know, it's obviously something that it's as I said, it's extremely proud to have it. You know, and I certainly never did think, growing up as a 17, 18 year old, that I would be in the that I'll be breaking records at a World Cup in, I don't know, 10 years' time. But, you know, it's it was obviously a great day for me and for my family and all my mates and stuff. So it's something that I look back on as well.
The fact that you did it against England, obviously the country here has a nice rivalry with the English. Are you still getting drinks, Buffy, on the back of that?
No, unfortunately not. I know, every now and again, you know, you'll get a little point here and there. But yeah, you know, it's against England probably makes it that much more special. If it was against maybe another team, it wouldn't have been highlighted so much. But I think Ireland beating England in any sport is fantastic for the country, and it just gives everyone a well-deserved lift.
In terms of a rivalry with the English in cricket, it's obviously been well-documented over the last decade or so with Irish lads, the likes of Ed Joyce, Boyd Rankin now has gone that way. I know there's Owen Morgan playing cricket for England. Is that something you had thought you might have to do to earn a living in this game, or was it ever a concern, or ever an option for you?
No, I never once thought about going and playing for England. Obviously, I did think about having a career in England as with a county team. But you know, I mean, it's if I had went over and earned my qualification or my residency, I mean, who knows what might happen? But you know, I think once I came back here and I was living in Ireland full time and just kind of popping over to England for 3 or 4 months for a contract, it never really came across my mind to shift over and try and qualify for England.
The whole test status thing that Ireland currently doesn't enjoy, it's an associate member of the ICC. What's the current situation with that? Are you aware of the current situation? Is that what are the chances of Ireland getting test status while you're still playing cricket?
I mean, I'd like to say while I'm still playing, they're very good. And I mean, I think all we can do on the field is continue to get the results. You know, we've got a very forward-thinking board led by Warren Dutrum. I mean, he put the proposal forward for Test cricket by the year 2020. You know, I think we're in 2013 now. You know, and Cricket Ireland has come a long way in 6 years, from the days of 2007 when we had a farmer, a postman, salesmen, teachers, students going to a World Cup. We've just come back from a World Cup there last year, and we were all professional cricketers. So I mean, in 6 years, it's come a long way, and who's to say in another 6 years that it won't go even further? You know, I think the important thing is that we just got to continue to win on the field and put in good performances when we don't win. You know, that's all we can do as players.
The most recent Irish encounter you've had was the clash against England in Malahide. Huge turnout. Was that something that you could ever have seen happening in Irish cricket, to have almost 10,000 people at a cricket game in Ireland?
Again, probably not. You know, I think in the last couple of years, obviously in the last couple of years, cricket has come to the front in the public's eye, you know, and you're seeing more cricket now in papers and on the internet and that type of thing, and on radio stations. But you know, I think it's something a couple of years ago, you know, I certainly wouldn't have thought of seeing 10,000. You know, I think I played in the first ODI we played against England in Belfast, and there were 6,000 at the match in 2006. So I mean, to times that by 1.5, it was a phenomenal achievement by all of Cricket Ireland to get just over 9,000 in Malahide on a school day midweek.
In terms of the future for Kevin O'Brien and for Irish cricket, what do the next few years hold for you?
For me personally, I just want to continue to be part of a successful Irish team. You know, I think the last couple of years I've played quite well. I just need to get a bit more consistent, you know, and I think I'm starting to do that. You know, hopefully for me, I've said it a few times before, and I mean, I'll continue to say, I think for me, 2020 is where my future lies, for the foreseeable future anyway. And I just hopefully I can grab a few more contracts around the world as I have done this year, and you know, continue to improve as a cricketer.
Trinidad this year was your big trip, I suppose. Where else did you manage to get a contract this year?
Yeah, I was in Trinidad for 4 weeks and signed for the Trinidad and Tobago Red Steel, and you know, it was a fantastic tournament to play in the Caribbean Premier League. I mean, it's the Indian version of the tournament over there. So, you know, I was fortunate enough to play with some world class players like Ross Taylor, Mahela Jayawardena from Sri Lanka, Dwayne Bravo from West Indies. You know, just some names that you see every day of the week. You know, it was a great honour for me to play with them and a great learning curve. I was lucky enough to, my coach was Gordon Greenidge, one of the best opening batsmen of all time, and you know, it was great to speak to him about cricket and learn some things from him. And then in January I was over in Bangladesh. I played for the Rangpur Riders in the Bangladesh Premier League. So yeah, I've been on the go since January, and it's been a pretty action-packed year for me so far. And, you know, it's not going to get any quieter in the next coming months.
So Kevin, every week we let the guest pick the music that closes the show. Have you a particular song you've chosen?
I don't want to sound too feminine, so I'm going to go for Coolio and Gangster's Paradise.
Good choice.
Alicia Keys was my normal choice, but I'll go for Coolio.
Why not Alicia Keys?
Yeah, it's Coolio for me.
Coolio. Any particular reason?
No, just it's a good song. I mean, it just whenever it comes on, you just can't help but sing along to it.
Perfect. Well, my guest this week in the Sporting Spotlight was Irish cricket legend, I'm going to use that word again, Kevin O'Brien, the fastest one-day century in World Cup cricket, and he's Irish. Kevin, thank you very much for coming in and joining us today, and we're going to finish the show with Gangster's Paradise from Coolio. As I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I take a look at my life and realize there's nothing left. Cause I've been blasting and laughing so long that even my mama thinks that my mind is gone. But I ain't never crossed a man that didn't deserve it. Me be treated like a punk, you know that's unheard of. You better watch how you're talking and where you're walking, or you and your homies might be lying in chalk. I really hate the trip, but I gotta lope. As they croak, I see myself in the pistol smoke. Fool, I'm the kind of G the little homies wanna be like. On my knees in the night, saying prayers in the streetlight. Been spending most of my life living in the gangster's paradise. Been spending most of my life living in the gangster's paradise. Keep spending most of my life living in the gangster's paradise. Keep spending most of my life living in the gangster's paradise. Look at the situation they got me facing. I can't live a normal life, I was raised by the shit, so I gotta be down with the hood team. Too much television watching got me chasing dreams.